there anything you'd like to...
We're good.
Okay, we're good. Ms. Ames, never mind. With that said, we'll call up Jim Davis, Jack Hasiak, Poy, and let's see here, Karen Gaffney.
Right. So this is her son. This is the commissioner from the Grand Rapids. Send an email.
Okay. All right. Please begin when you're ready.
Yes, I'm Jim Davis, a geropsychologist who chairs the Oregon Health Authority Older Adult and People with Disabilities Behavioral Health Advisory Council. I also represent the Governor's Commission on Senior Services and the Oregon Disability Commission and United Seniors of Oregon. I'm here to support the aspects of this budget that deal with seniors and people with disabilities. I had the honor of co-chairing the legislative work group on seniors and people with disabilities, mental health, and addictions with Senator Mona Anderson. We came up with a full report that I'd be glad to share with anybody who wants a copy, but with very in-depth recommendations that ultimately resulted in procurement of about $11 million plus dollars over the last, since about 2014, to begin the process of developing programs and services in the field for seniors and people with disabilities. It was a wonderful victory for us, and we got great support. And now what has happened, we have a state coordinator who's looking at this through Oregon Health Authority and the Health Systems Division. And we also have an very representative advisory council that represents us across the senior and disability communities. But I think most important is that a majority of this money has gone to the placement of 24 senior and disability behavioral health specialists all over the state. Depending on population, they've been assigned. They work through community mental health and sometimes through the area agencies on aging. We have always meant for this to be an absolute partnership with DHS as well in terms of reaching out to seniors and people with disabilities. But these specialists have been providing program and service development help to try to, in some areas there's very little for seniors. They do consultation, they do training, they work with the CCOs and the community mental health systems to begin to place greater emphasis on services for elders. I wrote my dissertation on this topic and could talk for endless amount of time, but in the past, less than 3% of community mental health has been geared to seniors, and I think I'm being generous when I say that. And in the alcohol and drug area, less than 1%. And so really seniors and people with disabilities have been ignored in this system. And so now we have specialists in the field, but they don't have enough support. They don't have enough ability to really access the kind of services that they need. And I would hope that this committee would look very hard at making sure that elders and people with disabilities are getting a fair share of the community mental health dollars. Elders and people with disabilities need greater access to community mental health programs, to other services, to crisis services. And the people that they're dealing with in the community need to be better prepared, better trained to deal with these populations. And oftentimes, they simply are not prepared to deal with these populations. And so, you know, if you look down the pike, us boomers are going to explode onto the scene. And I think that within the mental health and addictions arena, we need to start paying attention to the fact there are more and more elders, more and more people with disabilities. And as it is now, we're not dealing with their needs. And so what happens when they double? And they will. Seniors will double. And then there needs to be better training professionals so that they can deal with these the special needs of these populations. My final message to you is please make seniors and people with disabilities a high priority in how you make decisions around the senior, around the mental health and addiction systems. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Please.
Co-Chair Rayfield, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Jack Hodchuk. I live at 3029 13th Street, and I'm here at testifying as an independent mental health professional. First, given the national political climate, I just want to express my appreciation for Oregon's comparatively measured and reasoned civil political process. Thank you very much for your integrity. I'm a retired, I'm here testifying with qualified support for the bill. I'm a retired licensed psychologist and program administrator, now providing consultation and training services for both traditional and peer mental health organizations. I've worked for a recent 19 years as a clinical psychologist, and from 90 to 94 served as a mental health services program manager for Linn County Mental Health Services Program. I've also been the director of mental health organizations and alcoholism and drug abuse treatment programs in Colorado, New Mexico, and Michigan over a 40 plus year career. I'm testifying in support of maintaining as much as possible current funding levels for mental health services and for examining a more cost-effective manner of spending Oregon taxpayers' dollars for mental health services. I believe that the current coordinated care organization structure in the Oregon public health system allows for wasteful spending of tax dollars. I have not before seen a public system incorporate organizational entities which could transfer public dollars into private profits. I do appreciate the ingenuity which stimulated the CCO design, yet as a taxpayer, I expect the savings and profits to be recycled into expanded public services or lowered costs. As just one example, when recently working on House Bill 2304, which addresses the addition of two peer support roles into the traditional health worker portion of our administrative rules. There was an amendment I was working with Representative Kennemer by which we would be taking a look at making sure that every member of CCO would have introduced to them and explained to them the availability of peer services when they were first experiencing the intake process. During this process, it was reported in an organizational meeting, and I've seen then the written input made by CCO representatives that they were somewhat reticent to endorse the amendment because they were finding no way to help providers offset an unpaid balance left by Medicaid reimbursing only 60%. As a taxpayer, I find it unacceptable to have my money diverted to private profits while citizens in need are denied access to peer services, which are evidence-based and produce cost-effective, positive outcomes. I want my tax money directed to cost-effective services which meet targeted outcome goals, not to a private CCO's profit growth. I recommend restructuring the CCO model so that private profits are curtailed and a portion of the savings is used to maintain current mental health service levels. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Co-Chair Devlin and members, or Rayfield and members. My name is Karen Gaffney, and I'm here today as the Assistant Director for Lane County Health and Human Services. By way of introduction, I also am the Vice Chair of Trillium, our local CCO, and also just finished in January my second term as Co-Chair of the State Medicaid Advisory Committee. So while I'm not representing those bodies, I certainly bring that experience with me here today. In Lane County, we are long-term partners with the health authority, and
plan to be continuing as enthusiastic partners as we transform healthcare delivery and health in Oregon. And basically, I'm here today because I believe we're in this together. I know that there are still a lot of unknowns about the budget, in particular what will happen at the federal level related to Medicaid, but I do want to address briefly this morning three particular items related to the health authority budget that I think have a significant impact for people living in Lane County. The first thing I want to talk briefly about is Medicaid expansion. And in Lane County alone, we had about 40,000 people who were newly enrolled onto Medicaid as a result of that expansion. And that made a tremendous difference. And I need to tell you that that Medicaid piece is now a serious underpinning of our systems, not only in health, but also in public safety and housing. We're able to leverage those funds and gain a significant federal cost sharing to help provide those critical services. Prior to that expansion, those same people were medically indigent, which meant their mental health treatment services or substance abuse treatment services, physical health care, were provided in some of the most expensive and least coordinated settings. And if, in fact, the expansion rolls back, we can expect that those costs will continue to be shifted back to those entities impacting our public safety systems, hospital systems, or people won't get the services that they need and will really undo a lot of the hard-fought gains that we've had here in Oregon. In our clinics alone, Lane County operates a community health center. We have six sites. We saw about 30,000 patients last year. And in that group, I'll tell you, we have seen decreased emergency department visits. We've seen better control of diabetes. We've seen significant increases in developmental screenings. So our plan for transforming the healthcare system is working. The other two items I wanted to briefly comment on, the first is public health modernization, and it's connected to our efforts to transform health in Oregon. Funds for that were completely left out of the governor's budget, and given the momentum that was established through prior legislative sessions, it's really critical to fund at least part of the implementation of that program. We will never really achieve our goals for improving health if we can't have a strong public health system as part of that. And then finally, I wanted to touch on the Oregon Performance Plan. The settlement with the U.S. Department of Justice requires changes within our behavioral health systems at both the state and local level, and there's currently no additional funding proposed for that plan. And the connection really with the proposed closure or reductions at the Junction City Hospital is particularly critical in Lane County. We believe that the performance plan has the necessary elements to continue Oregon's transition from really an institutionally heavy system to a system of mental health that can honestly be considered community-based. Again, I know that there are enormous challenges with the budget this year. And so in close, I would say that I believe it's not possible to really meet these and other critical health and safety needs within existing revenue. The impacts within the co-chairs framework are too painful, and individuals across the community and certainly in Lane County will feel that most directly. So in order to address those issues, we need to have sufficient resources available or risk all the gains that we've made over the last several years. Thank you.
Thank you all. Next on the list is Heidi and Michael Turner and Cheryl Ramirez. For those that were there in the Ways and Means Roadshow, Heidi and Michael Turner today, thank you guys for driving all the way out here. You guys gave great testimony out in Madras over the weekend, so appreciate you guys being here.
Good morning, Representative Rayfield and the committee. My name is Heidi Turner. This is my son, Michael James McDaniel. I really thank you for allowing me to speak here today. I'm grateful for the opportunity. So I am a home health care worker for the town, through the town of Redmond, through Deschutes County, and it is my only job today. I'm here to testify on the Oregon Health Authority's budget and the importance of maintaining life-saving Oregon Health Plan coverage for the thousands of Oregonians. Roughly 25% of the residents in Deschutes County depend on the Oregon Health Plan for their basic and major needs. My son Michael was diagnosed with brain cancer in 2005, and I do have a chronic condition. I have chronic pancreatitis, and at this moment it is progressing. So I have unfortunately had to leave my position, and so this is the only job that I carry today, is taking care of my son. At the time I started this with my son, I worked for Walmart Corporation. I was a pharmacy technician. I earned a very nice wage and was able to take care of us. We received private insurance from Walmart Corporation. I had a $3,500 deductible with an 80-20 split. In the first 2 years, I was $160,000 in debt. I tried to apply for organ help, or for SSI for my son at that time. I was refused because I made $2 over the wage that was allowed. So we just went further in debt each month and each year. As of today, my son has endured 10 brain surgeries, 3 years of chemo, and intense radiation. He has received up to date $5 million in medical care. My son and I both now are on an Oregon health plan, and we cannot afford the costs of private health insurance. My son would have died many years ago without the coverage of Oregon health plan. If Michael had private health insurance, he might have hit his coverage limitations by now, probably for sure. And I have cared for my son for the last 11 years. I have only been paid by the state to provide services for him for the last 4 years. Excuse me. Without the home care workers program, we would be homeless. Michael receives $735 a month from SSI. I have cashed in my 401k, my savings, and anything else that I had from Walmart Corporation. Without the home care workers program, I would be homeless. Michael would be homeless. We would have no place. As it stands now, I will never be able to retire. There's absolutely no future in that for us. I wanted to be here today to share my story. When you're looking at the numbers on pages, when you're looking at the number on pages and the cost of the Oregon Health Plan, I would like you to think of my son, my boy, Michael, and think about how the budget is a reflection of the state's values. It would be shameful to choose lower corporate taxes over providing Oregonians with life-saving benefits of the Oregon Health Plan. Duly noted that corporate taxes are the lowest here in Oregon compared to the rest of the nation. I ask you today that you have the ability to choose life. I ask you to please choose wisely, and thank you for your time.
Good morning, Chair Rayfield and members of the committee. I'm Cheryl Ramirez. I'm the director of the Association of Oregon Community Mental Health Programs. We represent the community mental health system in Oregon, and the CMHPs have the oversight of programs for people with mental illness, addictions, and developmental disabilities. I'm here to support the portion of the budget that is Health Systems Division and Health Policy and Analytics, and particularly we support the small portion that is non-Medicaid. This non-Medicaid portion of the budget really represents the underpinnings of the behavioral health system in Oregon. It funds everything from health promotion, mental illness and addictions prevention, to the highest levels of care, crisis system, jail diversion, transition, helping people transition to Oregon State Hospital and back to the community, housing supports, supported employment, ESA, and other early intervention programs for children. This is a very important part of the budget to us, and so I would ask you to continue the support for the non-Medicaid portion. In my written testimony, I gave a couple of examples of success that we've had in the last year or so due to the investments in particular initiatives. One is on Aid and Assist, which I'm sure you've heard about already, and you will hear more about that targeted investment, and ACT. So both of these programs have helped people stay out of the Oregon State Hospital and out of emergency departments. And I think we've seen some really good return on investment with these programs, and there are others. There's also a lot of return on investment data in my written testimony on prevention early intervention programs. We're seeing more evidence that these work and they save costs down the road. Some of these are in Oregon, not statewide. Some of them are in other states in the nation. And then last, I'd just like to respond to a question by Senator Gelzer yesterday on mental health parity and whether we were there yet. I don't believe we are. And I mentioned this also in my written testimony, so I won't go on about this, but I just want to say that I think we'll see that we've achieved mental health parity when all payers cover mental health and addictions benefits and reimburse for the services and supports people need to recover and stay in the community. This is not the case right now. I think that to achieve mental health parity, we will have to, all health plans will have to see these services and supports as medically necessary. And right now, it's heavily a taxpayer responsibility, and we really rely on these funds to just keep the system in place. So I don't think we're there yet, and I think at some point we'll have to have a discussion among all the payers and all the system partners on what is a taxpayer responsibility and what is really a health plan benefit. And so I'd point you to the rest of my written testimony for more information on mental health parity, access, and some of those examples of return on investment. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Yeah, thank you both. And special thanks to Heidi and Michael Turner coming thank all the you. Way out here from Deschutes County. So appreciate it. Next on the list is Barb Satter and Karen Joplin and the former state representative Mary Nolan. Please begin when you're ready.
I'm sorry, good morning. I've had my notes up and now, of course, they're gone. Good morning, Co-Chair Rayfield, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of funding for Oregon's Behavioral Health System of Care. My name is Barb Cedar, and I'm the Executive Director of the Mid-Columbia Center for Living. We are the community mental health program for Hood River, Wasco, and Sherman counties. Center for Living is an intergovernmental agency with a board of directors consisting of a county commissioner from each county we serve. Our board chair, Commissioner Karen Joplin from Hood River, has joined me here today. Center for Living has worked collaboratively over the past few years with our CCOs, Pacific Source and Eastern Oregon CCO, the OHA, and local community partners in order to impact the triple aim of whole health care, better health, lower costs, and better access. With Medicaid expansion and funding, Center for Living, like other CMHPs across the state, have expanded their workforce and access to mental health and substance use disorders, as well as state investment grant funding that expanded the scope of services we provide. With braided funding from these two sources, we're able to provide a continuum of care that includes, as Cheryl mentioned, treatment services for substance abuse and mental health services, as well as assertive community treatment, crisis services, jail diversion, subsidized housing, wraparound services for children, and case management and peer-delivered services as well. Whereas our system isn't perfect, we've been progressing in the direction that was envisioned for healthcare transformation in Oregon. The Oregon mapping tool has shown us that Oregon still doesn't meet all the mental health and substance abuse need in the state. Beginning in April, the Certified Community Behavioral Health Center Demonstration Project, which the Oregon is one of 8 in the nation to participate in, and Center for Living is one of 13 agencies that are participating in Oregon, will help to meet the goals that the state set out to accomplish to further progress towards the triple aim by building upon the existing and emerging health system infrastructure central to our transformational progress and to integrate physical health in behavioral health settings. The elaborate data and financial tracking required for CCBHC will allow for more robust reports on cost effectiveness of the expanded access and services and provide improved outcome data on both physical and behavioral health metrics. If Oregon Health Plan or state funding is reduced, we may not be able to meet the goals set out by the OHA demonstration application to, again, increase, again, services and capacity. In closing, with the behavioral health system investments made by the state over the past 5 years, now is not the time to go backwards. Now is the time to continue to build on the success we are seeing with healthcare transformation. It's a time to continue to build on the investments that the state needs to complete the U.S. DOJ performance plan. And now's the time to support CCBHC demonstration project to be successful and a national example for exceptional integrated health care that bends the cost curve and improves the health of the citizens of Oregon. Again, thank you for your time.
Good morning, Co-Chair Rayfield and members of the committee. My name is Karen Joplin. I am a county commissioner for Hood River County. I am a member of the Oregon Health Policy Board. I am board chair of our community mental health program, Mid-Columbia Center for Living, and I am board chair of my regional CCO, Columbia Gorge Health Council, and Pacific Source Gorge CCO. That's what's up. Right, time's up. I wanted to take a moment and talk a little bit about our regional model and our successes regionally. I know that as you look across the state of Oregon, all counties are different, and we certainly are, respect and appreciate how everyone uses their resources in ways that are most appropriate for their local delivery system. In our region, our counties pooled our resources together, Hood River, Wasco, and Sherman. We created a G190, ORS G190, which is Mid-Columbia Center for Living, who delivers our community mental health program. So we sit on the board as commissioners, and the actual service delivery, all of the funding goes through Center for Living, and then as Center for Living contracts with our CCO as a provider. The model is unique in that the county has handed off responsibility of community mental health to a separate entity. It's been successful with our local CCO contracting situation as well. The contract is based on performance. There are withholds involved. We have been successfully meeting the metrics in our region. In rural Oregon, it's important that counties have the flexibility and the opportunity to either pool resources or to be creative in delivering services. We don't have the resources often larger communities have. In our area, we don't have any access to crisis assessment drop-off type facilities, so we have really no alternatives to take those in a mental health crisis other than the emergency room or jail. And in our jail, we also pool our resources. We have NORCOR, which is the facility that serves 4 counties, Hood River, Wasco, Sherman, and Gilliam. And we were ending up with a lot of our folks suffering from mental illness in our jail with lack of another safe place to go. It was determined the safest place. With some of the Oregon Health Authority investments around mobile crisis, assertive community treatment teams, and some of the jail diversion opportunities, we've really been able to move the needle on those with mental illness, and not incarcerating them is the only option, but yet keeping them stabilized in their community by meeting them in their place that they are. So that's been successful in our region. Let's see what else I wanted to say. I wanted to just emphasize the element of keeping flexibility at the local level for counties to be able to determine what's the best use of resources, the best delivery of resources, and the elements around contracting principles, around performance and value-based and alternative payment methodologies are really the vehicle and currently in place to eliminate obstacles to access, performance, quality, some of those elements that are being experienced around the state. Thank you.
Co-Chair Rayfield and members of the committee, my name is Mary Nolan. I am here today as the Executive Director of Planned Parenthood Advocates of Oregon and speaking to you on behalf of 12 health centers around Oregon where Planned Parenthood's licensed medical staff members provide care to over 70,000 patients every year. The patients who choose to receive their medical care at our centers include patients with private health insurance through an employer, patients who pay out of pocket, patients covered by individual insurance, including those who get health insurance through the exchange, patients covered under Title 10, which is America's family planning program, initiated when Richard Nixon was president, patients covered under Oregon's C-Care program, which stands for contraceptive care, and patients covered under the Oregon Health Plan, including thousands who became eligible for OHP through the Medicaid expansion. We make care available so women, men, and young people can receive high-quality services in a setting where they have the opportunity to fully understand their options, make their own choices, preserve medical privacy that is guaranteed under law, and benefit from compassionate, non-judgmental staff of professionals. Without regard to their income, religion, sex, sexual orientation, gender identity, birth nation, or insurance status. A significant portion of our patients rely on Planned Parenthood for basic health care and preventive services and also rely on public health programs, OHP, C-Care, Title 10, PEB, OWEB, and Medicare. For those patients, our services help them improve their health now and for years, and in many cases, for decades ahead. For their insurers, including the Oregon Health Authority, analysis shows that our services save millions of dollars more than they cost, beginning immediately. For the Oregon Health Authority, that means within the same biennium. It makes sense, but it's also handy for those of us who rely on data, that preventive services, particularly those that have, say, a 9-month payback period, within a 2-year period, preventive services, contraception, cancer screenings, other disease screenings, that have an opportunity to enable the patient to choose a preventive service, pay back the cost of that early care within a year and certainly within the 2-year period that you budget for. In a single biennium, estimates indicate that net savings for the Oregon Health Plan are in the $50 million range. Net savings. While specific data are not yet available, it is likely that the most recent enrollees probably generate a higher return of savings because they have had delayed care, and when they have the opportunity to receive that care, we can take care of diseases, their life planning, in a way that they didn't have an opportunity for before. For the healthcare system in Oregon, Planned Parenthood's health centers provide over 100,000 patient encounters each year. This volume of care is a significant load in the various markets around the state where we are active. There is simply not adequate capacity, nor sufficient licensed providers, physicians, or other medical personnel to fill the gap if Planned Parenthood were not providing this care. There is also not the philanthropic capacity in Oregon to replace services provided to OHP patients and others through Planned Parenthood. Nor, I would argue, should our patients or any other patients be required to depend on the sporadic generosity of a few thousands of donors for services that really should be the linchpin of a just society. We ask that you find the means, both in prioritizing preventive services provided by trusted providers like Planned Parenthood, and by raising sufficient revenue from a provider tax or other business or employment-related tax to assure that basic services like health care for everyone who calls Oregon home. Thank you for your attention. As a side note, I understand the difficulty that you face on this committee and in your other legislative business. I also know that it is not the purview of this committee alone to address the adequacy of revenue to provide for all the needs that make Oregon a humane, welcoming, safe, and healthy place for all the people who live here. But I know you have it within you to do it, and I trust in your capacity to find the solution in a way that works for Oregon. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. And thank you for traveling down to Hood River from Hood River to be with us today. So the next three on the list are Allison Seymour, Jean DeGeritt, and John Mullen. Please begin when you're ready.
Okay. Hello. Good morning. Co-Chair Rayfield and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to present testimony today. My name is Allison Seymour. I'm a registered nurse working at Salem Health on the Medical Telemetry Unit. I'm also a professional member of the Oregon Nurses Association. Removing patients from OHP is a step in the wrong direction. Many of the hundreds of thousands of Oregonians who signed up for OHP are actually younger and healthier than expected. Getting people to engage in preventative services saves the state money in the long run by addressing problems upstream. OHP has allowed women to prevent pregnancy with access to contraception. This has allowed women like myself to make timely life choices, allowing me to attend nursing school and strive for financial stability before starting a family. In addition, I have taken care of many patients at the hospital for complications due to poor dental hygiene. The care and the IV antibiotics and the heart monitoring and for some even surgery that they required is far more expensive than the routine dental care that OHP can provide. Furthermore, the past work that the Oregon Coordinated Care Associations have they've made great strides to decrease ER visits and prevent hospital readmissions. Better access to mental health services prevent people from acute crises on my unit. I strongly support funding for mental health and addiction services that aim to prevent these costly acute hospitalizations that really endanger the lives of our community members. I challenge you to, instead of kicking hundreds of thousands of Oregonians off of their health insurance, to please seek solutions. Please consider revenue reform to increase available funds for Oregonians by asking corporations, I know you've heard this, and the healthcare community to start paying their fair share. There are also solutions for the rising healthcare costs that we need to make steps to reduce fraud and waste. There are many examples of waste related to opiate seeking and excessive ER visits that need to be controlled. We need to seek patient outreach and increase patient education to help people manage their chronic illnesses. We need to make steps to increase patient self-sufficiency, medical compliance, and self-accountability. Furthermore, a large portion of OHP costs are related to the high prices of pharmaceuticals. The greed of the pharmaceutical industry has got to end in the state. The Oregon legislators have an obligation to at least challenge the pharmaceutical pricing by passing House Bill 2387, so Oregon consumers and OHP can help contain medication costs. Since the Affordable Care Act, hospitals and other members of the healthcare community have made a lot of money off of revenues that have come from public dollars. We need to ask these corporations and seek ways to increase transparency and the disclosure of hospital community benefits. As a registered nurse, I strongly urge you to prioritize prevention and services provided by OHP and to take action now to help preserve this access to care for members of our community and our state. Thank you very much.
Co-Chair Rayfield and members of the committee, I'm Jean DeJarnett and I'm a registered nurse. I recently retired from Marion County Health Department and I'm a member of Oregon Nurses Association. Oregon's current budget deficit has been caused by our long, broken tax structure, and as a result, our leaders are now faced with a choice to kick hundreds of thousands of Oregonians off of their health insurance or ask corporations and healthcare community to start paying their fair share. I think the choice is clear. And as a public health nurse, I worked with children and families for many years. I also was our coordinator down in our women's health clinic. But I've been able to see families have the coverage to cover their child's medical issues. Before the Affordable Care Act, children with previous medical diagnoses, such as seizures, were excluded from insurance coverage for seizure care. And that's been quite a few years, but it was painful to work with families. And I know, Representative Malmstrom, you understand this because you work, you're a retired public health nurse also. But it was very hard for some of these families because they had children with serious medical problems. They had private insurance and then were not able, because of the exclusions, to be able to have those types of services covered. So once the Affordable Care Act came in, quite a few of those families were eligible for the Oregon Health Plan so that those services were covered. But I think for most of us, we probably haven't really experienced what it's like to worry about going to the emergency room and how you're going to pay your bill. And knowing that you have to do it because your child's having seizures that are uncontrolled and they need to be hospitalized. So another change under the Affordable Care Act was to include more children and adults being covered for insurance who previously had been denied coverage. And then they were able to have preventative exams, immunizations, and care for illness. In the job that I had, I worked with quite a few children that had mental illness. I would say that probably about 40% of the kids on my caseload had some type of mental diagnosis. And so they got some services, quite a few of them through early intervention, which is covered by the state, but they also needed extra types of care, such as occupational therapy, speech, physical therapy, and you know, if they didn't have the Oregon Health Plan, they probably wouldn't have been able to have those things. So since the Affordable Care Act, the hospitals and other members of the healthcare community have been able to save money. A majority of hospital revenue comes from public dollars. Those who profit from serving patients on the Oregon Health Plan have a moral obligation to make sure those patients do not lose access to life-saving care. A budget is an expression of a state's values, so the legislature has an important choice to make, to raise revenue this session and prioritize funding for Oregon Health Plan recipients, or choose to make devastating cuts. And as a registered nurse, I strongly urge you to take action now to help preserve this access to care for all of those in our community. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee, for the record, John Mullen with the Oregon Law Center. I know that members are very familiar with our mission, which is achieving justice for Oregon's low-income communities. And so in that regard, the Oregon Law Center has been involved with the Oregon Health Plan, with Medicaid expansion, with healthcare transformation, a number of different issues relating to healthcare and the needs of low-income people. The great majority of the clients that we see in our systems are Oregon Health Plan clients. And so therefore, we continue to support the continued service level for the Oregon Health Plan, including Medicaid expansion. We're opposed to the cutting of the prioritized list, the treatment pairs. We see many people that struggle with issues that are lower down on the priority list and oftentimes have comorbidity issues. So we are very reluctant to see cuts happen there. We do know that revenue solutions are going to be necessary, and while that's not the domain of the Ways and Means Committee, I think that in your caucus and in other discussions in the building, to talk about where we are with the Oregon Health Plan moving forward are going to be very important. And we support the idea of looking at provider assessments and other means to make sure that we have the revenue available for the work ahead. I also want to mention, because it's part of the governor's recommended budget and was presented as part of the discussion here to your committee about Cover All Kids, this is another area where the Oregon Law Center has been strongly involved for a long period of time, working with many others. That's going to be a difficult issue because it involves the raising of additional revenue. But again, when we think about children in Oregon and the issues that they are facing, and the fact that, as has been testified many times before about children being our future and making sure that they get off to a healthy start and have the coverage they need is really very important. So again, Oregon has been quite a leader on health issues, and it would really be troubling if we took some steps back from what has been looked at as a model, going back to the days of creating the Oregon Health Plan, moving to Medicaid expansion as we have, and healthcare transformation that I believe is showing many, many good results. So I would encourage the full funding of the Oregon Health Plan and also for Cover All Kids. Thank you for your consideration. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Seymour, for your testimony at the Ways and Means hearing as well a couple weeks back. The last two folks on our list is Dan Torres and John Eames. If there's anybody else that would like to testify, please come forward at this time.
Excellent. Co-Chair Rayfield, members of the committee, thank you much for having me speak today. My name is Dan Torres. I'm with Oregon AFSCME Council 75. AFSCME represents 24,000 men and women across the state, including about 800 non-state hospital mental health, behavioral health, peer and family support specialists and counselors. In addition, we also represent about 200 non-state and non-OHSU medical doctors, nurses, and CNAs. I know this is a very challenging and difficult role you have in front of you when it comes to the human services budget. We are currently submitting, either in process, but we'll make sure that everyone has a copy of it, stories from four frontline behavioral health providers on what the impacts of budget cuts and the work that they provide on a daily basis. This testimony comes from a combination of workers we represent in the behavioral health services and also providers who are a member of SAS, which is the Solidarity Alliance of Social Services. These individuals represent the voice of frontline behavioral health system workers. They work in a mixture of both publicly funded and privately funded behavioral health. As we look at these budgets, I ask that you keep their stories in mind. Their stories are the real experiences of many behavioral health providers who know that this system is crucial for Oregon's success. As Karina Daughtry mentioned in her testimony, these budget cuts could mean the difference of life or death for many of her most vulnerable populations that she serves. Investing in mental health funding also is a larger investment in our community, as Linnea brings up in her testimony. The services she and others provide have been shown to decrease incarceration rates, decrease the chance of someone being homeless, and decrease cases of hospitalization. These frontline providers wanted to share their stories with you and their experiences with the hopes that when the tough decisions are made, that we make sure that we work to protect the services they provide to countless Oregonians, both directly and indirectly. I want to thank you for your time and opportunity, and let me know if you have any questions.
Right. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jonathan Eames, and I'm here on behalf of HealthShare of Oregon, a not-for-profit CCO up in the Tri-County area, largest as far as members in the state. You do have a difficult job indeed, and we're under no illusion that it's going to be an easy job for you to prioritize one thing over another. Everything that you consider, especially in the human services budget, is valuable. And the people that are associated with each one of these budget line items, there's always heart-wrenching stories that are associated with it. So we know how difficult it is. Obviously, from a CCO's perspective and from HealthShare's perspective, preserving the Oregon Health Plan and the benefits in the Oregon Health Plan are a top priority for us. And so what we want to do and what we're going to do is do everything we can to bring forward to you some solutions or some ideas on not only being creative with looking at how you look at the budget and what items are in the budget to see if there's anything we can do from a CCO's perspective. We're working with all the other 15 CCOs on a weekly basis to develop a plan for you, as well as looking at different revenue options to consider as you guys go down the path. It's a long legislative session. We've got 5 months until the end, but we wanted to make sure we iterate to you how we are working, and we want to provide solutions rather than just come, because you guys know how difficult each one of these cuts are. So, and you're going to hear these stories over and over again. You know, as Ms. Torres mentioned, you know, mental health and addiction cuts. You guys have heard me testify before this committee before, some of you have, about mental health and addictions and how important it is and how much these actually save costs down the road. The CCOs have been largely successful in what you charge them to do, which is to keep costs under 3.4% of a cost growth and in cost growth, and that has happened. And over the last 5 years that you have started down this experiment with healthcare transformation, you've seen better outcomes, you've seen lower costs, and you've seen a bend of that cost curve. I know it's an overused expression, but really that's what's happened. We want to continue that, and we want to show you and the federal government that what the confidence that you've placed in the coordinated care organizations, that has been successful, largely successful. We're just in a really difficult time as far as revenue coming down from the federal government as opposed to expenses. So we hope that we can continue to do the work that we do. We hope we can continue to get better and be more efficient and save more money for the state. And we will commit to you that we will come to you and provide some solutions here in the very near future for you to consider.
Thank you both, and sincerely thank you for being on time this morning. Is there anyone else that would like to testify today? All right, seeing none. Ms. Ames, is there anything we need to cover today? Mm-hmm. All right, with that, we'll go ahead and adjourn the meeting a little early today. Thank you.